You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 265.
It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, 10 years after the Earth-Minbari War. The Babylon Project was a dream given form. Its goal, to prevent another war by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. It's a port of call, home away from home for diplomats, hustlers, entrepreneurs, and wanderers. Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last best hope for peace. This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2258. The name of the place is Babylon 5.
Welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station 1 Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we are once again joined by Jared Albrick, art director for White Rocket Books and newly acquainted Babylon 5 watcher, and we are doing the Babylon 5 re/watch. Welcome back aboard the show, Jared.
I am thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. We've been doing two sets of shows parallel. We've done one each already, and this is our first of the second go-round, where we are working our way through Babylon 5 and through Quantum Leap. So if you haven't heard our Quantum Leap episode, it's just a couple of episodes back in your feed. But tonight, we are doing part two of Babylon 5, and we're going to cover the next four episodes. So what that means is that tonight we're going to look at Born to the Purple, Infection, The Parliament of Dreams, and Mind War. Now, Jared, I would say that means we're going to look at two absolutely excellent season one type episodes and two other episodes.
Okay. But I promised you last time I'd try to figure out which was which.
Yes. I'm wondering at what your suspicions are. Obviously you have your own, feelings about it, but I'm wondering if you know what I'm referring to.
Well, here's my struggle. All right. I figured out real fast that Infection is one of the other episodes.
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad. It's right. Just in comparison to the other one, it's kind of simple and a little bit slow. And we can talk about that when we get there. I struggle with what the other one is, though, because I thought the other three were all kind of on par with one another, and maybe I just haven't watched enough, Babylon 5 to be able to parse out, what from what yet. Like, my barometer isn't set yet, but I like the other three, so I'm interested to see what your thought on that is.
All right, well, we'll roll through this then. Let's kick off with Born to the Purple. That is, in terms of show order, that's episode 103. Okay, I know it's not production order. We'll get to that. I mean, if you go to the Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5, you can find the production number and then the airing order. And we're going by the airing order, which is the standard order, like the DVDs come in and like it aired on TV. We're not going by some bizarre because the production order doesn't always logically. Like, for example, the big season finale was not the last episode filmed for this season. So if you go by production number, it's not going to make any dang sense at all. Now, actually, I wanted to say one other thing. Before we get into 103, okay, Born of the Purple, I have now completed rewatching the entire first season, really for the first time in about 15 years. And moreover, I would say that I would put it this way to you, that season one, is generally regarded by most longtime fans as not the best season, okay, but it has its charms, okay. And here's the thing: there are a number of first season episodes that are considered even poor, even for first season Babylon 5, as we were just talking about. But having just rewatched all of the first season start to finish. I'm going to tell you that, A, I really enjoyed the first season. I really enjoyed it. And two, and I think even more importantly, two, I really enjoyed the episodes that are not the, like, most popular episodes, because I hadn't watched them in a long time. Like, I might have gone back and rewatched just, like, some of the big episodes of season one in the past. It's been a long time since I watched the smaller episodes of season one, and I forgot how much, like, connective material is in the B plot or the C plot that ties into the overall storyline. And I forgot just how much I enjoy the characters, even in the even ones where the stories are not that great. So you were telling me before we got started the last few days, you were telling me that Infection, for example, you thought it wasn't that bad. And I agree with you. I mean, it has a bad rap in terms of compared to some of the, you know, big things that happen later, but just for an hour of sci-fi television, it's not bad.
I'd agree with that, yeah. I thought it was pretty enjoyable. And okay. I thought it was really funny that it had the same actor in it that was in the Quantum Leap episode we watched with the cowboy. So it's all coming together, man.
Yeah, I never would have imagined. That's amazing. That's really cool. All right, well, here's the deal. Born to the Purple is a very Londo-centric episode. And I guess the summary real quick, and then you can throw in anything else that you want to add or that you didn't understand about the basic story, and then we can kind of dig into it a little bit. The basic idea of this one is that Londo has got files that it's like dirt he and his family have dug up on other important Centauri royal families. And this guy named Trakis, this alien, played by Clive Revel, wants to use a dancing girl who is enslaved to him as a way of getting that material from Londo, okay? And so Londo thinks he's head over heels in love, but actually she's just trying to steal from him. And then the other plot is that Susan Ivanova, is trying to use a restricted communications channel to talk to her father, who is dying, and Garibaldi is trying to figure out who's using that channel. So, is that what you got from the episode, and do you have any questions up front about it?
No, I gotta tell you, I think this episode was pretty straightforward. It was very welcome after the first, what did we watch, three before this?
The pilot and then the first two.
Pilot and the first two, and those were good. But I really liked this one, because I already learned from the pilot and the first two that I'm a Londo guy.
Oh, okay.
So I like a Londo-centric episode.
Okay.
And if you don't mind me just launching into stuff I like about this episode, I'll do that.
Well, let me tell you this first, and by all means, go ahead. This is the other one that's not highly regarded.
Oh, I really like this one. Okay. Okay, fair enough.
But I got to tell you, it's important. And I mean, as much as every episode is important, the overall story, there is a thing or two that we learned in this episode that will be important to some degree or another down the road, so... All right, so what?
Will we be seeing Londo's files again?
Maybe so. Who knows? Oh, this was a Larry DiTillo episode, by the way. The first season and the second season have two different people writing most of the episodes, and that would be JMS, of course, and then Larry DiTillo. So any episode that seems a little goofier, a little sillier, not as hardcore. And often they refer to things like Jovian or Jupiter or something like that, like the Jovian sunspot or off Jupiter or whatever. For some reason, that seems to be a DiTillo thing. He leaves the show after the second season, and we pretty much get nothing but JMS episodes the entire rest of the way, more or less, with a couple of exceptions.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's a record, I believe, for American television.
I liked it. I don't know. I think it would be – I mean, I know this is years in retrospect, but I would think it would be wise to keep a couple different voice flavors just, you know, to mix it up for the audience. But, whatever. Okay.
There's definitely something to be said for that, and I'm not going to disagree with you. I love where JMS is going, and since it's a giant novel for television, he finally decided he just wanted to be able to have complete control. And there's very good things that come from that. It achieves a unity of vision and a streamlinedness, especially in season 3 and 4. But you're right, it does suffer from, you get some repetitive stuff, you get some people saying the same sort of lines over and, you know, almost verbatim in different characters at different times, and it starts to more and more sound like the same person wrote it, if you know what I mean, so.
Okay, right.
So talk about Born of the Purple.
All right, Born of the Purple. Like I said, I was struggling to find out which ones are thought of as lesser episodes, so I didn't think that of this episode. Again, I'm a big Londo guy. I figured that out early. He's my kind of guy. I mean, like I said, he dresses like Prince, and he thinks he's funny all the time, and that's pretty much me in a nutshell. One of the things I liked about it was the way it started, where he was basically at a I don't know if it was a strip club, but more like a go-go club. Anyway, girls dancing.
Yeah.
Club, and the girl that played the slave girl. I know I've seen her in other stuff. She's really pretty, even with a bald head. She's
Fabiana
really
Udinio. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I, like I said, I know I've seen her in other stuff, but I guess it just wasn't clicking due to the makeup job and all that. But she was real pretty, and what I really liked about that scene is you've got Londo and Jakar, who have already figured out butt heads all the time, but they absolutely get on the same, you know, sheet of music when it comes to lovely women. They are in 100% lockstep agreement, and I think that's funny because it's such a man thing. You can have two guys that just hate each other, but then, you know, a pretty girl walks by, and they're both like, oh, yeah, that's pretty nice. You know? And,
it's true.
So I like that bit.
That's true.
So, yeah, I like that. I liked I thought the performances were good. I liked the sub-story. I liked a lot because, like I mentioned in the last episode, I didn't feel like they've done anything with Ivanova. And
right.
To me, she's the least interesting one. And I love, whether it's in Quantum Leap or James Bond or any other podcast you and I do together, I love character development stuff. And I thought it was a big character development stride. It showed us a lot about Garibaldi. Or Garibaldine, as I like to call him. I think that's funny. I don't know if I'm the first person who ever made that joke, but Garibaldine.
I don't get it.
Because he doesn't have, his hairline's receding, so he's...
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, I made that joke to him, actually. I had my John Sheridan uniform on, and I saw him at Dragon Con, and we were getting his autograph and talking to him. And I said, you know, I got this uniform, this costume as a Sheridan costume, but I said the more my hairline recedes, the more it becomes you.
How did he receive that?
Oh, he thought that was pretty funny. He's like, yeah, it's me.
But like, yeah, like I said, those two characters, especially from the first three, I'm like, okay, I don't see a lot here. And then I thought they developed it really well. I thought it was a neat story about sort of Garibaldi doing his job, a little game of cat and mouse they play together. And then of course he figures it out that it was her, but he plays it in the coolest way possible, you know, doesn't embarrass her. Absolutely takes care of her the way a friend would. So you can see the strengthening of a relationship right there in episode essentially 4. So I like that.
Yeah. I was trying to think. We didn't get a lot of Sinclair in this episode, did we? It's he was working on
not
the
really.
Euphrates Treaty and trying to get Londo to come to the conference, and Londo was not coming because he was all in. He's all up in the with his dancing girl.
He had priorities. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot to mention this. I guess I'm officially absorbed into the world of Babylon 5 now because I now have a new go-to line when someone bothers me and I'm in the middle of something.
Yeah.
I say, what do you want, you moon-faced assassin of joy?
Yes. Oh, Londo gets the best lines throughout the entire series. He absolutely
you
does.
You moon-faced assassin of joy.
Yes. Oh.
I have adopted that as part of my vernacular now.
Yes, Vir, what is it? Londo gets the best lines. He absolutely does. By the way, you may have, I don't know if they mention it here, but just so you'll know, because it's not a big deal, apparently the idea is that the men Centauri do their hair peacock style, right, to get attention, whereas the women shave their heads. There was some contention back and forth as to whether the Centauri women are just bald or whether they do that on purpose. And and I think there's a line at some point later where either Londo or some other Centauri says something about the hair, and he says maybe we should be like the women who shave their heads and rise above it. In other words, they're above such petty competition, they just get rid of it. So, but you notice they wear those little headbands that covers up the covering of their hair. You know, in the makeup, in other words. You know, in other words, in real life, they haven't shaved their heads. The makeup artist comes in and does basically the same thing they do to Londo. Londo's hair, his prosthesis goes all the way down the bridge of his nose and over his eyebrows.
Okay.
So people are looking up on his forehead for the line, and there's no line, and it's because it's over his nose.
Ah, crafty makeup.
So I guess the only thing I would really say about this episode real quick is it is important that we see Londo has another side to him, and he likes Adira. And Trakis is kind of a disposable villain. And it's interesting to see that we're learning a little bit about Susan, which is that she's Russian and her father is dying. And I don't remember yet if we know about her mother, what's become of her mother, and she had a brother as well. So we'll get another episode.
The only thing we got, I think, was that it was very heavily hinted at that her mother was absent from her life.
Yeah, that's fair to say. And there's another episode coming up a bit later on that's going to go a little further into that, so I'll just kind of leave it there. But we're starting to get a little bit of a picture about Ivanova and her family. And you know that Straczynski considers himself descended from Russians, and so he puts a lot of his own personality into Susan in terms of, you know, I'm Russian, we think everything's, you know, she just has all these lines about that always start with I'm Russian, so therefore, you know. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of funny because she's very pessimistic. She figures everything's going to go to hell constantly, you know, and that's just kind of the way it is. So, all right, well, let's move on to the next one then, because that one's there's not a whole lot to dig into in that one. Let's go to Infection. We talked a little bit about it. This is the organic technology episode where we established that there is organic technology in the Babylon 5 universe, which is pretty powerful. And in other words, it's like it's super advanced technology, but part of it is alive, right?
Right, yeah. It's like living solid state matter.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
There we'll see that again, don't worry. And we see David McCallum, old from Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
He's Dr. Hendricks.
I knew that guy looked familiar.
Yeah, he was Ilya Kuryakin from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And he's an old friend of Dr. Franklin. And his assistant is Marshall Teague playing. That's the guy you're talking about was on the...
Yeah,
and I believe he's going to show up later as an alien that's really cool. So we'll see Marshall Teague again in makeup. And he's one of everybody's favorite characters that shows up much later on. So we'll be seeing him again.
So we'll get more of him, but not as the same guy?
Right. Yeah, there's at least two or three actors in Babylon 5 that play both a human... There's at least three I can think of immediately that play both a human character and an alien in a lot of makeup character. I can think of three just right off my head right now, and there may be more than that, and he's one of them. So.
Okay.
And they're all... they're all really cool characters too. They're all among my favorites, both good and bad. So
well, he plays a good cowboy too. So
he does. All right. So Ikara 7 apparently is sort of the equivalent of like in Fred Saberhagen's Berserker stories, where they created a technology that was so powerful, and then they told it to destroy the enemy, and the technology decided they were the enemy. You know, that's the old saw from the Berserker books is that these aliens were having a war, and so they built these giant robot space station things that are super deadly to win the war, and they did by just killing everybody but them, right?
It's Skynet from Terminator.
It is slightly, yeah, that's a slight twist on it. And so there are these wonderful books and anthologies that Saberhagen's done over the years of all these Berserker stories. And this is the same sort of idea, but instead of a big spaceship, it's like it infects you with organic technology and turns you into the equivalent of an Ikaran warrior.
Right.
And in fact, at one point, Dr. Hendricks says that organic technology is, quote, the one trick Earth hasn't been able to crack, the ability to create living ships that thrive in the vacuum of space and weapons that produce their own power. That's going to be important, too. Let's see. So I'm trying to think if there was another plot in this one. It seems like there's a B plot, but I can't think.
Let me rack my brain for a second, cheat a little bit, look at the summary on my Plex box.
I don't
vamp for time.
Well, it may be that the Raiders storyline was still going on. They did a lot of that's a big thing in the first season. Is the Raiders, these pirates, basically space pirates out there, you know? And I want to say at some point, oh, I know. No, it was Sinclair goes and, no, that was doggone it. See, it's already been a few weeks since I watched these.
I just read the synopsis off my Plex box, and it doesn't have, it usually tells you what the subplot is, but it doesn't say anything else. Yeah. I don't remember.
Well,
whatever it was weak, whatever it was.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this is the thing. This was the first episode ever produced. And so the actors really were just getting started after they waited. And even worse, I mean, they had done the pilot, but it had been a year. It had been almost a year, if not an entire year, since they did the pilot. And so obviously a lot had changed. And they had some of them had to get back into character. Some of them had to use their character for the first time. Like, for example, I believe Dr. Franklin is in this episode, but what's funny is he hadn't come on the station yet. When they filmed this episode, in fact, this may be the episode where he shows up. Maybe
I think it is. There was another doctor in the premiere movie, but it was a different guy.
Yeah, yeah. But one of these episodes is where Franklin first shows up, and the show's already been on.
I think it's this one.
Yeah, maybe so. So, okay.
Will we see more of Franklin? Will he be a
Dr. Franklin?
Character.
Dr. Franklin, oh yeah, he's a major character, absolutely, all the way through.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's hard to tell an infection, like, it feels like a throwaway episode, so it's kind of hard to tell what they're going to throw away and what they're going to keep.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that this one is very straightforward. I believe this is the one that JMS said if the negatives of the film accidentally fell off the pier into the ocean, he wouldn't cry too hard about it. But yeah, I mean, I do kind of like it. It's a good action episode. You've got Sinclair going down there and outthinking him, like, you know, making him do a short circuit, telling him, you know, your world is dead and you did it. It's all your fault. You know, and he's like, no, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's like the classic Star Trek where Kirk talks the computers into like self-destructing, you know?
Yeah.
I always enjoy
like
that.
It felt like the Kirk talk around.
Yeah, yeah. I always enjoy that. I always enjoy that. We learned a couple of things about Garibaldi. He and Sinclair were stranded on Mars and had to walk 50 miles to get back to civilization. And that's how they bonded and became friends. And so also we know that Garibaldi had a very spotted past until Sinclair gave him this job. So it's interesting how the main people that run Babylon 5 are all people with checkered past. You know, I mean, Sinclair was like 20th on the list, you know, of who should run Babylon 5. And the Minbari vetoed everybody until they got to him.
I think something's afoot there, man.
Yeah, and then he picks Garibaldi when I'm sure there were lots of, you know, super highly trained Earth Force guys who would have loved to have been security chief on a 5-mile-long, you know, station. And we also found out that Lloyd's of London had placed the odds on the station surviving a year at 500-1, which is kind of funny.
Yes.
I think that's the same odds of the show surviving more than a year, so they won that too. I think there's not a whole lot else in this episode.
No, it's an action piece really more than anything.
Oh, there is one other thing though that's of note is that Dr. Hendricks, David McCallum, he was working licensed out to an organization I believe called Interplanetary Excursions, IPX. And these are guys that travel around the dark, shadowy places of the galaxy where nobody's gone in 1,000 years, and they poke around in ancient graves and crypts and lost civilizations and stuff. So there's some really cool potential there, I would have to say. You know, when you're going around finding thousand-year-old abandoned planet crypts and poking them with a sharp stick to see what comes out and see if it'll make you rich or not. There's a and obviously the infection, the Ikaran technology was the first thing we've seen, but you got to admit that there's some potential there, right?
Sure, yeah. Who doesn't like interstellar grave robbers?
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Let me see. Let's pause here for just a second before we move on to the two bigger, bolder episodes. I got to make sure we thank our patrons of our show, our good supporters who keep us on the air. Of course, we always have to thank Nicholas Cottrell for all that he has done. And also, we have Bill Matthews to thank, Michael Kirshner, Dave Powell, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, and one Jared Albrick. Interesting. So
that's weird because that's not a common name.
Yeah, it's amazing that there's that many of them out there involved in this show. So, all right. So I guess we'll let me see. I want to run our quick promo, so we'll be back in just a second.
Hey, everyone. This amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Okay, so let's get into the second half of our look at these four Babylon 5 episodes. We've looked at Born of the Purple and Infection, and now it's time for Parliament of Dreams. Now, I got to tell you up front a couple of things. The Parliament of Dreams is the religion episode to a certain degree, but it's also got some cool it's got a great B-plot.
But is that the Jakar B plot?
Yes. Oh, I love the A plot and the B plot of this episode so much. But Parliament Dreams, this was actually the subject of our huge LARP, our live action role play at Dragon Con 2000. In the year 2000 at Dragon Con, that we still had an all Babylon 5 programming track with its own room and everything. We had a big room, too, for Babylon 5. It was all Babylon 5 all weekend from Friday through Monday. And I talked them into letting us do a Babylon 5 LARP in 2000 and in 2001. And what we did in 2000 was the Parliament of Dreams party. We had the guy that was playing the role of Londo be the host. And people, we decorated as soon as the last panel was over around 5 or 6 or 7 o'clock, we came in there and decorated the entire room in purple and gold and chintzy stuff like the Centauri like. They like a lot of purple and gold, you know. And
yeah, yeah.
We put out a big punch bowl and little statues of aliens and stuff like they like. And everybody was in costume. It was awesome. And we had like the Parliament of Dreams party. And then that was on Friday night. And then Saturday we did the actual simulation of the council, the Babylon 5, you know, Galactic Council or whatever it's called. And I played the role of Bruce Boxleitner's character. See, so we can't go too far into that. And we had all the other ambassadors up there at the front table. And then we had the the non-aligned worlds ambassadors out there. You haven't seen very many of them yet, but they're coming. There's quite a few alien races that you haven't really seen yet, but that you're going to see. And then so for the party, we did like the whole thing. Like, and this is what you see in this episode is, yeah. So the idea is that Earth wants to have each alien race and Earth show off their predominant religious practices and beliefs. And so we get to see a little bit of how different ones do their religion. And we also get to meet Catherine Sakai for the first time. Now, I was wondering what you would think about this, because if you remember, Sinclair's girlfriend in the pilot was a completely different person.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. And my biggest burning question I had was Catherine Zagai's, her thoughts are on frictionless sheets. And we didn't get to that, but I'm hoping sometime soon.
That was in the pilot, right, with the other one?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. They were talking about how really sexy frictionless sheets are, and I'm just thinking that can't really help you, but
Can't be good. You got to have some traction. Traction's very important.
Traction there, man.
I believe I paid attention to it more this time because I was, as soon as Catherine showed up, I'm like, oh, it's Catherine now. Now I'm like, all right, let me see if I can figure out if they try to get around it being a different actress. I couldn't remember if it was the same character or not. And at one point, there's just a throwaway line where I think Sinclair says something like, or I want to say Catherine says, how's what's her name? And Sinclair says, oh, we broke up or something. So I think they address it like immediately. That the girlfriend from the pilot is gone, okay, is no longer around. And so this is Sinclair's, like, beloved girlfriend from forever, okay? That's who Catherine
Spice. Right,
right. Played by the wonderful Julia Nixon, who is also in one of my favorite miniseries, Noble House. She's an awesome character in Noble House, too. I met her at Dragon Con a few years ago, too. And I went up to her, and I was in, like, a Babylon 5 costume. And I said, Julia, I really loved you in Noble House. She's like, oh, yes. Because she probably doesn't get a lot of that, you know. So that was kind of neat. It's just like when I met Barry Morse, everybody was talking to him about Space 1999. I said, I really enjoyed your work in War and Remembrance as the Nazi general. And he's like, oh, yes, my boy. Yes, that was fun. So
I met Chuck Dixon one time, and I threw down a copy of Airboy for him to sign.
There you go. See,
and he just looked at it and looked at me, and he was like, how many back issue bins did you have to go through to find this?
There you go. That's right. So we also get, we also get an awesome B-plot with Jakar and Matoth, which we'll get to in just a second. But first, so Catherine comes aboard, and Garibaldi is panicking because he knows that things never seem to work out between them, and that's going to make life hard for him, I guess, somehow, being Garibaldi.
He did the guy thing, you know. He gave the heads up, you know, like, hey, Catherine, your ex is here.
Yeah, look out, yeah. So before we get into the B plot with Jakar, which is so much fun, what did you think about the A plot, the religious ceremonies, and especially the Centauri festival?
Oh, well, it was obviously a lot of fun, especially Centauri festival, where everybody is cute except for Londo because in purple, he's what's the word? He's
but in
stunning.
Purple, I'm. Stunning! Blam!
Which was awesome.
He has become one with his inner self.
It was very, very funny. Very entertaining. And
yes.
I think it served the show well because if you remember when we talked about back in the pilot, like they just crammed the entire encyclopedia in your face. Yeah. And this was a good way to take a step back from that and give you a real flavor for how these people generally act, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we're focused on the religious ceremonies, but it says a lot about them as just from their character traits, you know. What's the other race? I'll get these eventually.
Yeah, you will.
That the Lin is from.
The Minbari.
That's her. The Minbari, they're obviously much like her. They're very sort of stoic and reserved. And,
right. Oh, God.
And then the Centauri's are really outgoing. Did we get to see the Narns? I don't remember seeing the Narns.
I don't think
they showed it.
I don't think so, but we do see – this is why I'm confused. We definitely see a very important Narn religious ceremony at some point in season one, but it may be a little bit later on. So I don't think they showed it. I don't think they had room to fit it in this episode. But, yeah, we saw the Minbari doing exactly what you'd expect the Minbari to do for a ceremony, which is wear a bunch of hoods and have a bunch of plastic, colorful plastic stuff and be very solemn and, you know, holier than thou about it, which is so funny. Like, eat this red cherry thing and that Valen spit on or something. I don't know. But I just, before we leave it behind, I just have to revisit. You know... You're very cute for a Minbari. I just love that. And Delin's just looking at him like, what? And you're cute.
You're cute.
Everybody's cute. But in purple, I'm stunning. 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 I just love it. It's great. We actually,
that was great. That
we
was
actually
great.
Had T-shirts made up for that LARP, for that Parliament of Dreams party at Dragon Con. We had T-shirts made up, and on the back it had Londo with his arms spread like that, and it said, "But in purple, I'm stunning." we actually made those for the thing. Let me see. All right, let's get into the B-plot, because B-plot's so much fun. Tell a little bit about what you remember about the B-plot. I want to get your perspective on it.
The B-plot, I love the way it started, because basically this courier brought a message to Jakar. Mm-hmm. And I loved how it started, because he showed up and he was like, are you Ambassador Jakar? He's like, I'm in Ambassador Jakar's room. I'm eating Ambassador Jakar's dinner. He's like a complete jerk.
Yeah.
And the guy gives him the video of some old nemesis of him back on
Narn.
In the Narn regime.
Oh, Jared. Now, Jared, hold on. Before we move on that, you got to say, when you start, I'd forgotten until you said that, when you start out in that scene, I mean, you remember now, look how far we've come so quickly. Remember Jakar in the pilot and in Midnight on the Firing Line? He was basically the Klingon, right?
Right.
Okay. Now you open on Jakar in a bathrobe, fixing food and singing, "So many fishes in the sea, so many fishes, but none for me." Yeah, that's right. So we've come a long way in a very short time with Jakar, haven't we? You're seeing there's a lot more to him. There's a lot more to him than first you first think.
Well, like I said, they developed him a little bit in the previous episode when he was basically completely in agreement with Londo for the first time over beautiful women, which was great.
Yeah.
And I liked him. I think he might have even gone back to the pilot. They had a pretty funny moment with him where he was talking to the psychic and telling her that he was going to give her the privilege of letting her mate with him.
Yes, yeah. Would you like to be conscious or unconscious for it?
Yeah, I prefer conscious.
But that's up to you, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, Andreas. Funny. Andreas is his greatest. I love him so much. Oh. He's just like that in real life, a real actor. All right, so Tupari, the messenger, the courier, brings that message.
Right. And so, which was great, because he said, I loved, because he puts on the message and like his old nemesis, and you don't even really know it's his nemesis yet. He's like, if you're watching this, I have died. And he says something hilarious, like in Good Riddance, where it's about time.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, Jakar. Had me cracking up.
Yeah. And he says something like, you will know fear, and you will know pain, and then you will die. Okay. And that's the big hanger off to the intro. All right. So how does Jakar and his right-hand woman, Natath, how do they get out of it? I love it.
They stage, the funny thing is Jakar's not even sure what's real and what's not, because he's like on pins and needles about who's out to get him. And they basically determine that the guy who's the courier is actually the assassin.
Right.
And then his female assistant basically fakes like she's the backup assassin. You don't really, is it fake? Yeah. Is it real?
Right.
That's the question. And she beats the mess out of him, and even admits to enjoying it a little bit.
Yeah.
And ends up she was actually loyal. They basically turn the tables on that guy. Isn't there something about if he.
Oh, it's brilliant. They put a whole bunch of...
If he fails his mission...
They put a bunch of money in his account.
Oh, that's what it was.
And yeah, they say now... Like
he had no honor, and that the people who employed him were now going to come after him.
Right, and so they take him down to the docks to get him on a ship, and they say, you'll know pain, and you'll know fear, and you'll die. Have a nice trip.
Have a nice trip.
Shut him out the door. It's awesome. Yeah, he made it about 5 minutes after that, and somebody killed him because they put all that money in his account so it would look like he had been paid off not to do his job, and that would be the death sentence from the Assassin's Guild. So I love that he had the little... What I know this must have made you, the James Bond fan, think of something. When Jakar wakes up and there's a feather, or I mean a black flower on his pillow or whatever, what did that remind you of?
Are you fishing for a lice or a Live and Let Die reference?
I am, yes.
It's a small man who lost a fight to a chicken.
Chicken of limited means.
That's right, a small man of limited means who lost a fight to a chicken.
That's one of the best lines in the entire Bond series. Yeah, and so that's just what I thought of when I saw that, when I saw the death blossom as Natoth. I really love Natoth, by the way. By the way, you don't get as much of Natoth as you'd like in the show because she had a real bad time with the makeup. So she's not in it as much as we would like, unfortunately. But she's in it a good bit, especially in this season. So enjoy her while you can. So
she is a lot of fun. She's very charming.
Mm-hmm.
Very charming character.
Interestingly, she's also the lady that plays her, Julie Caitlin Brown, is also like an agent in Hollywood. And so she represents or has connections to a lot of the actors. And so she was very tight with some of the Dragon Con people back in the day. And that's why Dragon Con used to get all the great Babylon 5 guests. When I say I've met this person, I met this person, it's because I was at Dragon Con and was interested. But mainly it's because Dragon Con was able to get them. And so just about everybody that ever was on the show has been at Dragon Con as a guest, and there have been years that they had 6, 7, 8, 9 of them at a time. It was fantastic. So the early 2000s were a really good time to be a Babylon 5 fan and go to Dragon Con. I mean, I know other conventions have done it, but
yeah. You told me this is one of your favorite things, and I believed you, but now that I know that you've LARPed this and talked to characters in costume,
yep.
I have to reevaluate our friendship, but we'll see how it goes.
I can't blame you. Okay.
You are not kidding.
No, not at all. That's my favorite thing in the universe. So, well, let's see. So we, yeah. So what comes out of this episode then is, we get some fun stuff with Jakar. We get to meet Catherine Sakai. I believe we see her again in the next episode, which is even more important with her. And
yes.
then you have that really cool ending. I just got to point out, we have that really cool ending where, here's the thing I like about it. I know that some people like about it that it shows the diversity of Earth cultures when they have all the different, like the rabbi and the priest and all that. It's like the setup for a joke that they never actually say. You know, you've got a 5-mile-long space station, a rabbi, a priest, a Dalai Lama, you know, walk into it. But anyway, so they do that. But I looked at it as, It almost shows how science fiction makes every culture except ours monolithic. You know, that always used to drive me crazy about Star Trek, that every planet was the equivalent of like a small country on Earth. You know, they never seemed to visit planets where they had 100 different cultures.
Yeah, that was the one thing about it that bugged me. And I mean, I got what they were doing, and it was a charming message about the diversity of Earth, of course. But it bugged me in that, like, Sinclair's been racking his brain the whole time, and he's like, I want you to meet Gary so-and-so, and he's an atheist, and I want you to meet Father, you know, Garducci, and he's, you know, he's going down the line. And I'm like, this is neat and charming. I get what they're trying to do with it, and it's, you know, it's cool.
Right.
But, like, that was my big complaint. I was like, wouldn't someone from one of the other regimes just go, yeah, we have a giant empire too. We played by the rules and showed you our dominant religion.
Can you
parse this down for a minute?
Right. That's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah.
Chop this up for me, buddy. I need to see the dominant religion.
No kidding. It's true. It's absolutely. I mean, I've always thought the same thing. It's like, on the one hand, yeah, it's a really neat idea. On the other hand, it's kind of like not exactly the point, and it makes all the others look very one-dimensional and cartoonish in a way. So
it does, and I don't know. It just, yeah. It's, like I said, I get what they're trying to do, and it's nice. It's a nice gesture.
Yeah.
But yeah, that the first question that popped in my head was, when someone in STEM called BS. This is BS.
Yeah,
I'm playing by the rules.
I've always had I've been of two minds about it myself. So, okay. Well, our last episode for this week is 106 Mind War. And what actor do you get to see on Babylon 5 for the first time?
If I'm not mistaken, there is an actor who's appeared on some other science fiction stuff. I think we saw Walter Koenig.
We did, yeah. Interestingly, here's what happened. He was originally supposed to play a character that would only appear once in an episode later on in this season, and a really good one, by the way, that we'll be coming up on in a couple of episodes. And ended up, when they filmed it, they may have filmed it first or something like that. I forget exactly. but he was not available for it. And so they had him play this role instead, and it worked out great because he did such a good job as Bester. And I'll go ahead and tell you, you're going to see him again because he was so good that he's coming back. He's coming back, man. You're going to see Bester again.
Well, if you got Walter Koenig, I mean, you, and he wants to come back, then yeah, you don't say no to that.
Right, right. No, yeah. And you know, he's named after Alfred Bester, the science fiction writer from The Star Is My Destination and Demolished Man and all that. But he's because it's a...
I don't know what
I'm talking about. I wasn't sure if you were familiar with that, but it's a...
No.
Yeah, Alfred Bester wrote two famous science fiction novels, at least one of which involves telepathy and psychic stuff, and so it made sense to name the head psychop, basically, after him.
Yeah, I had a real hard time with it because, you know, I've only ever seen him play Chekhov, and he's so lovable.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he's not lovable on this, my brain was like, I don't know what to do with this information.
He's great as a villain, isn't he? I mean,
he was good. And you know, villain's a strong word. It's just a guy with a different perspective doing his job, but he's a jerk.
I guess when a guy shows up in black leather and is there to like kill somebody that we're supposed to be sympathetic to, you're kind of, or abduct him slash kill him, then you're kind of like, I guess he's kind of the villain, but you're right. I mean, he's sort of like a fascist telepath enforcer guy along with Kelsey, his assistant. And we had Jason Ironheart, the king of overacting, but you know, he makes William Shatner look subtle in this episode. Talia, I am becoming.
He's like, oh yeah. God. You're talking about the guy who played Dr. Manhattan in this episode, I guess.
Yeah, he was. That's right. Yeah, Jason Ironheart. Now, several interesting things come out of this episode. We've got the, there's a B plot I want to get to in just a minute, but Ironheart was Talia's instructor at PsyCorps. And
a little more than that.
A little more than that, yeah, yeah. And so we finally get a little more Talia. I don't think they use Talia enough in season one. Yeah, she's pretty cool. And she's a telepath who obviously has loyalty to the PsyCorps, but she sees the stuff they're doing. You know, you can't really miss it, too. So, and Ironheart is on the run because they've been doing weird experiments to make him telekinetic, right? I mean, what did you think about that a telekinetic that can move big things is okay, but a telekinetic that can move little things is even better?
That was, you know, when they first say it, it sounds weird, but then when he explains it, that basically they're being developed for assassination.
Right.
Then it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's very much like the Invisible Woman in the Marvel Universe. People often forget about how powerful she is, but she could kill anybody. She'll bubble in the Hulk's brain and then expand it, and he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's definitely, that's right. So, we get some kind of skin crawly stuff talking about telepaths making love, which I could have done without, honestly. But
I could stand here a little more.
Let's see. We blow up Kelsey, and then Ironheart escapes. but at the end, we see that Talia now has a tiny little bit of telekinesis herself. She's able to move a coin.
Yeah, he gave her a little telekinesis, and Ironheart not only escapes, like I said, he kind of like that. That's what I was joking about. Like, he kind of becomes Dr. Manhattan. He like transcends.
That's right.
And into a very powerful being. So, interested to see if that'll come back at all.
Yeah, I would be very interested to see that too as we go forward. Sure. The B plot is very interesting, this one, because it has almost nothing to do with that in some ways, but it kind of does behind the scenes. But it's Catherine Sakai is back, and we find out that what she does is she's kind of a surveyor, like a lone surveyor. She takes her little ship out and surveys planets for doing some mining and developing and so forth. And she's getting ready to go to Sigma 957. And who takes great exception to her going to Sigma 957?
Well, that would be Jakar.
Yeah, because he knows that something likes to hang around Sigma 957.
He makes it very clear to her that it is not a good place to go and it's dangerous.
And I guess she just assumes he's just being a narn and saying, it's all mine, 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 stay away.
Oh, yeah.
No, he was He was serious. He was being
legit. He even bailed her out.
He comes and rescues
her. Bail her out.
Yeah, she's crashing. She's going to burn up in the atmosphere. Here comes Jakar with the fighters or whatever and rescues her. And at the end, they had that great conversation. It's one of my favorite scenes in the whole series where they're having that conversation. And she's like asking, what were those things? And he says, there are things in the universe. Let me see if I got the quote. It's a really great thing. I don't know if I have it on here, but he says something like, there are things in the universe that look upon us the way we look at an ant. And if they notice us at all, it is as like a tiny little ant. There are things that walk, and they walk at Sigma 957, and they like to walk there alone, basically.
Yeah, it was a pretty good scene too. I agree with you. He, you know, he actually picked up an actual ant, or actually told her, I think he told her to, and then he was like, "Yeah," he's like, "So now explain yourself to the ant." You know, it's you can't do it.
It's a very much a Galactus and Earth people type thing where, like,
yes,
you know, whenever the Fantastic Four is trying to talk to Galactus and they're like, he won't listen. It's like an ant trying to talk to somebody. You know, so yeah, that's right. So, yeah, that's definitely something that's planting some seeds for the future. Don't you worry.
I have that feeling. I was like, we'll be revisiting this again.
Yeah. So we learned a little bit about Catherine. We learned a little bit about the ancient beings that walk across the galaxy. We learned a little bit about Psi-Corps, right? So, so Parliament of Dreams and Mind War, these two are two of my favorite season one episodes because they're so important. They got a lot of fun stuff in them, but they're also really big and important at introducing us to the bigger picture, you know, to more stuff that's going on. So, also, one other thing, and this is just something to bear in mind if you never notice it again. Did you notice that when Bester left, he did a funny little salute? Did you happen to catch that? Like he's tipping his hat or something?
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but I remember there was a unique gesture.
Yeah,
but I don't remember what it was.
Kind of like you grab your hat and you tip it with your hand, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, just bear that in mind. All right. All kinds of clues floating around. So, okay, so that's the four. Let me get your overall thoughts about these four and how they compare maybe to the pilot and to the first two and like that, if you have anything else to say about it.
Just the broad thoughts, and I kind of shared a little already, just that this set I found more engrossing and more entertaining than the first set. Of course, the first set had that 90-minute pilot, which threw the entire universe at me, and I was just curled up in a ball and crying, and I didn't know what to do. And and so it was nice to pace these things out and learn some more. Like I said, I figured out early on that the infection episode was the weak link, but I still didn't think it was a terrible show. I didn't feel like I wasted my time. In fact, I watched all these episodes twice. I watched them through originally, like we talked about before. I sat down and watched them through, and then I listened to them, basically, as I was doing some art projects. And I really just enjoyed these. I was more in tune with these. And I think it's not a slight on the first bunch. I think it's just I'm now getting more comfortable with the characters. I bet if I go back and watch the first bunch again after a few episodes, I'll have that broader understanding, and they'll probably be a bit more entertaining for me. But I don't regret any of them. I'm enjoying this trip tremendously.
Like I said, I thought that I was just going to have to get through season one. And honestly, I was sad when I got to the end the other day. I wanted to just go back and start over season one again because I know how good season two is, and I know how great season three is, and I know how season four is possibly the best thing ever on television. So some people like three better than four. It just depends. But I really enjoyed this one for just individual sci-fi television episodes that were as good as anything most shows ever do in a lot of cases. Oh, yeah. You know? So it's only going to get better.
I would not argue with that assessment. I think it's really, really good television.
Yeah. Well, in our next episode, and I'm going to suggest this, and you tell me what you think. I say we do five, because we zip through these pretty quickly, and we're just pretty much the end now. So if you are up for it, I say we do The War Prayer, because I don't have a whole lot to say about that one. The Sky Full of Stars, which is very good. Death Walker is interesting. Believers, there will be some conversation about that one, trust me. And then we might as well go ahead and slap Survivors on there, too, because it's... Because it's 22 episodes, and it's going to be an odd number. I want to work it out to where we hit 22 as the last one. So, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, we'll figure it out. But
I will have to acquire the episodes after And the Sky Full of Stars, because those are the ones I currently have up through there.
All right. Well, we will watch those, and we'll be back in, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks, I guess. We'll actually be back before that with our next Quantum Leap episode. We recently did the latest James Bond on Her Majesty's Secret podcast with John Ringer. That one's out there. And we'll have other stuff coming. We're constantly coming at you. In fact, here's just a programming note. We've got a couple of Avengers Assemble podcast episodes coming up very soon, too. And also, I think we're getting ready to do an episode talking about Iron Fist, the Netflix Marvel show. And we'll be doing one talking about...
Am I invited to that?
If you've seen it and you're interested in talking about it, absolutely. And we've got an episode coming up on Thor. We got the Thor trailer. We might want to do a short, quick episode on that, too. So, yeah, lots of fun stuff coming up. Have you watched Iron Fist?
New Comics with Normies came out.
Well, that's right. And you got that coming. Yeah, you got that coming up in the next few days, too. Absolutely. Okay, well, any last thoughts before we wrap up for tonight?
I want to say watch out for blimps, but that's a different show.
It's a different show. Yeah.
No, I'm fired up about it. Yeah, we'll do the five more, and I'm totally down for that. My last thought is I'm really enjoying this.
Very good. Me too. I'm enjoying it more than I expected, having seen it about 10 times already. So, absolutely. Okay, folks. So the White Rocket's going to get out of here for another week. And thank you, Jared. And we will see you guys down the road.
Bye-bye.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.